cliffcentral.com.
I want to talk to Ronnie Uptaker. I haven't seen the guy for a little while. He's coming in here. The man who brought the internet to South Africa, my buddy. No small achievement. Just a little thing.
It's just a little thing that most of us managed to do, you know.
Yeah, of course. No big deal, no. Ronnie. Just bringing the internet to South Africa, making all these internet businesses in South Africa work. It's nothing much. You shouldn't be too proud of yourself.
Yeah, calm yourself down already.
Hell.
I'm trying.
How are you, my man?
Good to see you again.
So lucky to see you.
Me too.
What's news? How are things?
Things are busy. I'm sure here too. I put these on.
You know, I was thinking about it the other day because I just got back from Silicon Valley and I was in South by Southwest last year and all of this stuff. And I thought, guys like you, you brought the first internet service provider to South Africa and Internet Solutions, right?
Mm-hmm.
Did you have any idea of how big it was at the time? Or did you say, this thing might be a big deal. Let's just see where we go on this.
Well, that's a good question. I don't think anybody, for example, saw this.
The mobile phone, huh?
The mobile phone. And behind the scenes, the internet is connecting
everything,
all these different services. So if you take, for example, the Airbnb or Uber phenomena, it's all powered by the internet, even though it's transparent and seamless. And you shouldn't even think about it.
We can't get by without the internet.
Yeah.
There's nothing.
But I'm saying, the mobile explosion and
it's amazing,
what it's doing
right?
to the internet traffic.
In Africa especially.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, did you have any idea?
I don't think anybody did. It's just there was a convergence, and it's still happening. And I think I really think things are just waking up. We're going to see not only a rise in services and in things that we just couldn't even imagine, but there's going to be an increase in vulnerability, an increase in criminal activity, an increase in dangerous things, exposure. You were talking about Zimbabwe and social media. There's going to be an increase in all kinds of things, good and bad, that we just didn't anticipate. We're becoming more and more accessible and more
dependent.
Dependent, that's a good word. And just, I use the word just now, vulnerable.
Yeah.
You know, this stuff makes us, I mean, there's been articles about internet-based depression and you know, the kids of today, that they are so driven by getting likes and so driven by getting followers that it creates this anxiety. Now, who anticipated any of this stuff? If you'd said 20 years ago, 23 years ago, wow, these internet providers are popping up, but it's going to lead to mass depression and anxiety, you say, what are you talking about? It's fantastic. It connects us all. But the byproduct of connecting is that if you, I guess, stuck in the corner and aren't feeding that connectivity, it'll start to feel inadequate.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people are so dependent on it and they're so connected to the internet that actually their brains don't work unless they are, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, in your previous show,
you have to Google everything.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that as well. I mean, nobody
actually knows anything anymore.
No one knows.
You were saying in the previous show?
No, you were talking about sitting at home in Zim on social media.
Yeah.
I mean, it's if you're not eating and money's tight, you sit on the internet and you make noises and you complain and you raise pulses and you...
Doesn't mean you're doing anything, though.
Well, that's another whole discussion. Absolutely. I'm with you on that. Yeah, that is a personal passion of mine to tell that story, that when people say, no, I'm working hard, I emailed a bunch of people, I said, but are you actually going to knock on their doors? Are you getting your hands dirty? Where's the scars? You know, when people say they've been busy researching, it means they've been on Google, but they haven't been out there in the field actually getting rejected, you know, having to chase people, having to knock on doors, sleep outside someone's office and wait for them to get in. They say, no, I was busy, I was on Google all day. And that's hard work. Yeah. Apparently that is.
Now, when you started, I mean, I just want to go back to this because I think for South Africa, this was a very important time in our development. If we go back to 93.
It was 93, yeah.
I mean, what were you guys thinking?
You know, we were a bunch of...
Because it was you and two other dudes.
Yeah. And then it became five of us. And
who were the other two guys with you?
So my university friends, Tom and Philip. And then Philip left us, and my brother and our family friend David Frankel joined. We all called ourselves the original founders, because the business only started to really t- take shape in that first year. In the first 6, 7, 8 months, it was more an experiment than anything else. And then in about the third year, it started to grow like really fast.
Who did you have to meet with in the beginning? I mean, I would imagine Telkom.
Well, of course, you had to build still today. I mean, Saki, who runs IS, ongoing relationship with Telkom are key.
Yeah.
But ultimately, you were reaching out to anyone who had infrastructure, computer networks, investments in technology, online databases, and that would be at the time big banks, information companies, insurance, media. Today, it's everyone.
Yeah.
You can't be in business without IT.
But at the time, I imagine there must have been a lot of people who didn't really understand.
Oh, yeah, no, we were told to footsack.
You were, right?
Oh, yeah, plenty.
And when you see those people now, don't you just, even if you don't mention their names and you don't think about them a lot, because you're not the kind of guy who would hold grudges, but... I mean, you're not.
Well, I get told to footsack every single day. So,
right, exactly.
So if I was holding grudges, that list would be long.
So, you know, when you see these guys around...
I'm still running around knocking on doors.
And these assholes missed out on an opportunity to be a part of the future. Do you sometimes just laugh to yourself? You're like, yeah,
we tell stories so much. I don't remember the names, but I remember one guy in a conference stood up after a presentation I made and said, "This reminds me of the Pet Rock." You know, it's like,
really?
Yeah, I remember that quite vividly. But you know,
whatever happened to him, do you know?
I was about 30 then. He was in his 60s. So I'm not even sure if he's around. That was a long time ago.
Oh, man.
I hope he's around.
Was it easy to get... it's easy to get geeks and people who were... Because geeks at that stage weren't even cool. Now they're cool and rich.
You know, I don't know.
Is it easy to get them involved?
I don't know about cool and rich. I know a lot of geeks that aren't rich. And a lot of geeks are not that cool. But I mean, but I hear what you're saying.
Yeah.
But the point is, what you're trying to make is that they never were rich or cool.
No.
Now there's a lot of them.
Yeah.
But not the masses. You know, it's like in any industry. Look at sports people. Are they all rich and cool? It's a few at the top. I think it's like yourself. There's not many people that have done what you've done.
Do you think that because you did well and you discovered this, well, I mean, you brought it here. You did the hard work in the beginning when there was nothing.
I'm still doing the hard work.
Man. Okay, sure. But you're doing it in different places now. Yeah, you're not involved in that as much, right?
Yeah.
Do you think that because you did that and I suppose you're also one of those people, you're a bit like me, you get a bit bored very quickly. Like if you do the same thing for too long, you've had enough.
You know, I never thought about that. Maybe you're right.
You got a little bit of attention deficit disorder.
What's that?
See?
Well, we can make these bad jokes all day.
No, but I think you do because it wasn't something that was diagnosed as a problem in those days.
I think isn't that like the thing about history repeating itself?
Is what?
You see, I'm taking the joke too far.
Try and concentrate here.
No, but that is the thing. The one thing about history is it does repeat itself.
Yes, you've just said that.
The one thing about history is it does repeat itself.
Right. I've got you into a bad place now.
No, these jokes are okay. That's a little bit out there.
When you started this, you started this business, you got South Africa's first internet service provider going, and then you guys sold out of that.
Well, it was more like joining forces. You know, still most of the people that were there are still there. We joined with a bigger technology company called Dimension Data.
Yeah.
And that,
but you mostly got out. You don't do day-to-day work there.
No. I help IS and DD on quite a few things. I've got such a full plate of film work and charity work and just various different initiatives. A lot of them are not that commercial, but I still...
Movies are not commercial.
Well, not that I have any evidence of. You know, you try. Your intention is to do something commercial, but I have yet to see any evidence of sustenance in that space.
You know, it's so difficult to get an entire industry going where there isn't one.
Yeah,
you did that with internet, but I think in movies, in this country, the market is maybe just too small.
I don't want to hijack the show with that because there's another big passion.
We have
a fundamental fact here that we can't change, that movie ticket prices are the cheapest in the world.
And yet we still can't fill cinemas.
Well, the numbers in terms of absolute ticket sales aren't that bad.
So then what's the problem?
But if the movie ticket prices are, say, $3, where in the US it's average of $12, I mean, you know London.
Yeah.
What's a movie ticket price cost there?
Well, it must be around there, around 12.
£10 minimum.
Yeah.
The West End, you can pay up to £22.
So $12, yeah.
$12 in the US, and in the UK about £10, up to £22, which is about $30. Okay. Can you imagine setting movie ticket prices here at $10 each? $10 at the minimum of world of now, Western standards.
I mean, that's no one's going to pay $150, $160 for that.
But
right?
If we did, the movie industry would actually be, I think, a viable proposition.
So box office,
even if we came in at the lowest of the world prices.
Okay, but so box office returns are just not enough.
Well, in dollar terms, and everything is reported in dollars.
Yeah.
The costs are in dollars. If a movie ticket price, I think average price is about 40 rand. What's that in dollars? Because when you take all the discount schemes and all the different pricing tiers, let's say 50 rand. Let's make it 50.
Okay.
I know some tickets are still 15 rand. Okay. And if you go into like Southgate and Northgate, but let's say 50 rand. In dollars, that's about $3, $3.5.
It's not enough.
In the US, they would say this business is going to go bust. And yet here, that's the reality. And all the costs are in dollars. So that's simple fact. It's not a question of opinion. Those are the numbers. People say, Ronnie, you've got a negative attitude.
Would people,
it's not negative. Those are the facts.
Ronnie, would people pay $150 to see a movie?
No, I don't know. But I'm saying, but that is the problem underpinning it. So if the movie ticket prices were even at the bottom of world standards, we'd have a viable, more lucrative. To say more lucrative sounds like it is lucrative. We'd have a possible industry. It's not lucrative at all.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And what does it cost to make movies? Because people don't know the first thing about this.
Well, people ask me, what does it take to make movies? I just say, cash. They say, what about talent? I say, don't worry about the talent.
Bottomless pit.
You just need money. They say, no, what about writers and actors? I say, don't worry about that. You just need cash. Because with cash, you can get writers and actors. They're not going to work for free. They need to pay their bills. And I don't know any of them that the money's falling out of the sky. So what does it take to make movies? You need money. You need talent. You need a vision. And you need marketing. And luck. You know, anything
and
to
decent
do with
ticket prices at the box
well,
office.
Well, that, yeah, absolutely, absolutely. But that's a fact. That's not an opinion. You know,
but I mean, you've made movies like Material and Cold Harbor and Tell Me Sweet Something. And have any of these made money for you?
Well, Material and Sweet Something. Material I drove, Sweet Something I helped on.
Yeah.
Sweet Something did, it kind of broke even.
Okay.
And Material made, it made a profit, but it's a tiny profit. It was a big success on many levels. It's a national set work. It traveled the world in film festivals. It certainly helped bolster a lot of careers. I mean, Riyad Musa and Joey, I think, had a huge elevation, and rightfully so. They did brilliantly. And it's a celebrated piece in the Indian community, and about 7 million South Africans have seen it.
That's amazing.
It wasn't enough for us to actually say, you know what, we can make another one.
Yeah.
We made that at 7 rand to the dollar. It's now about 15 rand to the dollar. So it'll cost double. It was about 6.5 million rand budget, and now be 12.
And you wouldn't make back half.
Well, the ticket prices didn't double.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and cinema as a
have
business.
Have you heard about this this Afrikaans movie? We had those guys in the other day. They've just done an Afrikaans movie that they've made something like 12 or 13 million.
There was a record break in Africa, Randolph, I think, right? For Altate.
I think we met the guy who...
Yeah, it's set a new... Yeah. I'm involved in a few films at the moment. I'm helping on a film called Beyond the River, which is directed by Craig and written by Craig, who also directed Material and wrote Material.
Craig, what's his surname?
Craig Frymont.
Okay.
So we all worked together writing and making Material, and he's driving the creative of Beyond the River, which is a film for an NGO called Heartlines that Dr. Garth Jaffet is the visionary behind. And if I can boldly say, I mean, it's coming out next year. It's a huge step up from Material. So when you see this film, you're going to go, wow.
What's the story here?
So it's a true story about a black youngster from like an informal settlement that teams up with a school teacher from Kingsmead, and they win the doozy. And it's all about going against the odds and about overcoming hardship and about believing in yourself and about camaraderie and team spirit and about just giving everything you got to lifting yourself up.
Sounds good.
And he goes against these incredible odds. in the light of the hardest conditions, and it's a real film. It's like a real, it doesn't have the charm of material. It's not a comedy. There are a couple of light moments. But in terms of in terms of artist growth, when you see this, you're going to say, I cannot believe the quality of this film, that this came out of South Africa. It is such an extraordinary piece of work and such a huge step up from material that it's just, it's mind-blowingly good.
Where does this passion for filmmaking come from with you? Is it storytelling?
Storytelling. Storytelling. For example, let me just show you something here. You weren't meant to see that last part, and I know we're on the radio, so this is not probably the best thing. But like, for example, have a look here. You see this phone?
This is my buddy. All right, Mubs is busy.
Can you have a quick look?
Yeah.
You know what is virtual? You know what virtual technology is?
Tell me.
So instead of having business cards that are printed, we now have like virtual cards.
Okay.
So I just say to the phone, look, I say, get card. Look, and there's the card.
Ah.
See, it's in the phone.
That didn't even take a second.
No, but check. But I can actually take it out of the phone and give it to you. But anyway,
you just actually produced a real card from behind the phone.
Well, the phone printed it out. It was like...
Do it for me again.
I'll do it just now.
Are you still doing the magic tricks?
A little. Not as much as I'd like because of the workload. But... to go back to your question,
didn't you start, and we could all do like it helps break the ice and
well, that's yeah, that's
people talking to each other.
So we've got this website called Coolfidence, which
I think
it's fair to say it's a public service. I wouldn't call it a business venture. Businesses have books and accounts and people paying money. We are spending money, but it's an experiment, a very beautiful, inspired experiment, and it's all about going back to your question about storytelling, helping people to have an edge. To engage. The world is what we were hinting at earlier. The world is actually, with all this technology, is disengaging.
Yeah.
People are lacking confidence. People are lonely. Loneliness, if you read journals about this, loneliness is the world's biggest disease. You were talking about the one gentleman, I think his mom was a cancer.
Yeah, Camel.
Cancer, is she still around?
She's still fine, she just went for a treatment yesterday and he said she's at home.
Okay, thank God. But a bigger disease than cancer is loneliness.
Yeah.
It is a disease. You can catch it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like, I don't mean catch it like a germ, but for example,
you could feel very disconnected from
absolutely.
The world.
Absolutely, you can get involved in things, and before you know it, you've caught this loneliness. You kind of get stuck behind your computer, and you don't even realize it's happening. But it's a disease, and you can get sucked into this world. And the youth, in particular, are incredibly dysfunctional. And I'm sure we spoke about this last time, but I can say to someone, Gareth, go and phone Joe Soap and make an appointment and go and see them. And then I say, Gareth, did you phone them? So I texted them and they say, I didn't say text, it phone. They say, what's the difference? But the fact that youngsters don't know the difference is incredibly worrying because they don't know how to engage. They don't know how to make eye contact. They don't know how to leave these things alone. They don't know how to break the ice. Soft skills are becoming more and more important in this age of incredibly wired people. People are so wired. Like I read this thing, I've read it a few times now, called mobile morning syndrome.
What is that?
You wake up, the first thing you do, before you brush your teeth, check your phone. You check your social media, you check your messages, you check your email, you check your Twitter things, you check your Facebook messaging, you check Instagram, you check.
And we shouldn't do this?
Well, it does seem a bit nuts. You're a married guy, you got kids, you know, you wake up before you see your lovely wife and kids, you haven't even brushed your teeth. You got that bad breath and you're on your phone. And then you think, oh, you know what? Yeah. If I actually got out of bed, I could miss the traffic, but you actually stay in bed. Also, it's freezing cold. It's nice and cozy and you're glued to this thing. Then you have the stresses, the battery charge. I mean, look at the habits we do. We go home, the first thing we do is plug things in.
Yes.
Charge. We all do it. I was reading an article.
I'm so paranoid about this. I carry around three different packs, that battery packs that actually keep my phone going.
You should see someone about
that. I think I should.
That sounds like...
I think I should.
Two, I would have... But three is bad, right? Three is quite extreme. But we do have this... I've been reading about it. I read it in big journals like Time Magazine. Morning mobile syndrome. So we started Coolfidence, this let's call it a movement. Actually, hang on, movement implies quite big. It's a mini movement.
Okay.
Maybe after the show it'll be slightly bigger, but we hope. But it's trying to, and thanks for talking about this.
Sure.
But we're trying to share with people, insights and tips and techniques, give them guidance about how to feel normal, that it's not just me. How do you knock on a door? How do you cold call? How do you break the ice? How do you make an impression? How do you maximize your time at a conference? How do you network? If we don't learn, it's like Dale Carnegie, how to win friends and influence people, just a modern day take. And that stuff will always be important.
It's
timeless.
It's valuable, right?
Because we don't know how to influence people. We don't know how to make an impression. We think we do. But with all this technology, how do you make an impression? Gareth, if I meet you and I'm looking at you like this, it's not making an impression.
Through the phone, yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, can you imagine you sit in a meeting and someone's sharing their challenges of their business and you say, sorry, I just got to just check this message out. At this point, they're not really digging you. They're not trusting you. They're not feeling comfortable. No. They don't feel that you really care. They don't feel that you're listening. There's no eye contact. You keep looking at this phone and the other person or people's are not really thinking you should come back. We don't need this guy. He's not really, he doesn't care. She doesn't care. Their heart's not in it. They're too important for us. You know, if you always,
there's another conversation they'd rather be having.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Like, you know, I say to people, people come and see me a lot about film projects and IT and they take calls. And I normally have this thing. I only had it out to show that thing. That thing can stay hidden. But I say to someone, you're busy looking at your phone and you're here to pitch to me. I said, if I was Nelson Mandela, would you do that? They said, but you're not Nelson Mandela. I said, but where do you draw the line? You know, at what point do you have respect for anyone other than Nelson Mandela? Is it only Nelson Mandela? I mean, as an example, or Bill Gates. If Bill Gates was sitting with a youngster, would he be checking his messages? Probably not. But you and me, they would do it and say, but why not the four of us in this room?
You'd never know. I mean, when people met with you in 1993,
we didn't have these things.
You didn't have them, but if they didn't take you seriously, then they'd be kicking themselves now. You don't know. Yeah. Mabale might be the next president of the country, for all we know.
You know what?
How did you know?
In which case, why do you think I'm so careful not to be rude to her?
I'm sure we met before.
Yes,
I have a feeling you do a good job.
I have that feeling too.
No, I'm serious.
Thank you very much.
I don't want to get politically, and I don't want to say you're coming off a low base, because I mean, I think any of us in this room could do it. Actually, that's not fair.
What, are you talking about the president?
No, actually, I'm not very political, so I better not. But I mean, it actually, the jokes write themselves. We don't. And I don't think it's exclusive to South Africa.
Yeah.
England just overtook us. Yeah. I mean, like, very quickly, they took the Comedy Award in politics. America, well, I mean, we need a whole day for that show.
Yes, sir. I mean, what do you think is going to happen there?
Yeah.
Well, I think that like everyone else thinks, that Trump being president is a reality. It could happen. It can't say it's impossible.
Yeah.
It's not like a 1% long shot.
Sure.
I think it's going to be a very close race. I personally don't trust Hillary Clinton. Not that I know her.
She's crooked.
She seems to be slightly evil. And money orientated. On the other hand, Trump seems to be
got Bill for a husband. I mean, yeah, she's not a very good judge of character either, right?
Well, and then, of course, we have crooked Hillary. Crooked Hillary, fuck.
You know, and I mean, there are all the jokes, of course. You know, like, it's time to have a woman in the Oval Office, and Bill says, we've been there, done that, you know. You know, I mean, all those jokes, you know. But, I mean, you can't exactly say that our presidency is unique in its crazy antics. I mean, the world is just off its rocker.
Sure.
I mean, if Trump becomes president, I mean, Hillary seems evil. He just doesn't seem to care about anything or anybody. Whatever he says.
Just his ego.
He's just having fun.
Yeah.
And I don't know, can you have fun with the world's most powerful economy? I mean, can you just have this is time to party? I mean, can you imagine what he's... I mean, maybe it's good. Maybe he's so crazy that he'll say, you know what, let's cut out all the shit. Let's get on to hard work, what the brass tacks.
Yeah, we're going to stop troops.
But we'll also get all the other nonsense that come with us. Let's all have our own Playboy mansion and it's all about me. I mean, I don't know. He seems like Hugh Hefner with a twist.
It's all me with him. There's no doubt.
Maybe it's just his unfortunate hair.
But I want to go back to something serious for a second, because what you're saying about people being disconnected is massively important. It's massive. But that's why I love what you're saying about confidence.
Why do you think Trump has a chance? Because if people were connected, we wouldn't be so powerful.
No.
They are so lonely, so disconnected, they'll believe in anything.
Yes.
But what about the argument by...
Come on, that's... Now you're getting in. Okay, now we go. Okay, here we're going. Okay.
No, I often hear these young people say this, which is, but if I'm connected to the internet and I'm on social media and I'm how could I possibly be disconnected? I'm engaging with
millions...
Well,
this is the paradox. This is
millions
the big,
of other people in the world.
I was involved in a book got published in the 90s about this, called The Progress Paradox. It was a small project that had a nice message about this. And it was before the mobile explosion. I foresaw this coming. it is a big paradox. And George Carlin did that fantastic thing
that
about we've got more degrees and less education, more knowledge but less common sense, bigger houses and smaller families. It's all part of the paradox. It's all part of that paradox. It was called The Age. It's a famous piece of text. It's been around in various forms and MP3s, web pages, video files, text on Facebook. I think it's called The Age. What's it, the Age of Paradox? Or
but let, it's me, a famous, let me play this quickly because I think this is... you just reminded me about
but
it.
But it's a timeless clip ago. And he said this 20 years ago.
Yeah, he's dead now, unfortunately. Yeah, yeah, he was probably one of the best comedians that ever lived.
Absolutely, a genius, sir.
And here's George Carlin talking about...
Thank you. I'm a modern man, a man for the millennium.
That's the
digital
one.
And smoke-free. A diversified, multicultural, postmodern deconstructionist, politically, anatomically, and ecologically incorrect. I've been uplinked and downloaded, I've been inputted and outsourced. I know the upside of downsizing, I know the downside of upgrading. I'm a high-tech lowlife, a cutting-edge, state-of-the-art, bi-coastal multitasker, and I can give you a gigabyte in a nanosecond. I'm new wave, but I'm old school, and my inner child is outward bound. I'm a hot-wired, heat-seeking, warm-hearted, cool customer, voice-activated and biodegradable. I interface with my database is in cyberspace, so I'm interactive, I'm hyperactive, and from time to time, I'm radioactive. Behind the eight ball, ahead of the curve, riding the wave, dodging the bullet, pushing the envelope. I'm on point, on task, on message, and off drugs. I got no need for coke and speed. I got no urge to binge and purge. I'm in the moment, on the edge, over the top, but under the radar. A high concept, low profile, medium range ballistic missionary. A streetwise smart bomb. A top gun bottom feeder. I wear power ties, I tell power lies, I take power naps, I run victory laps. I'm a totally ongoing Bigfoot slam dunk rainmaker with a proactive outreach. A raging workaholic. A working rager. Out of rehab and in denial.
I mean, the guy was a genius.
That I think that's a... I haven't heard that clip. Now, that, I think, is a more recent one. Not that he's recent, but because there was an earlier one. I know you know it because everybody knows it. It did the rounds. It does the round every other year. It was called, like, the paradox of our times. That's exactly what it's called. And that goes to your question. We are connected, but as in that film, The Matrix warned us, I think that was one of the messages, is that this technology is controlling us. So while we have the ability to connect, it's too much. Just like we have an all-you-can-eat buffet. At what point do you say,
stop eating
because you're going to explode? At what point do you say this social media is actually quite antisocial? I mean, there's been many, many clips floating around. Every 6 months, one comes out. There was a very cool black rapper. There was a nerdy-looking guy. There was like an Asian guy. They all have these YouTube videos with millions of views about how this technology, I'm sure you've all seen these clips, they do the rounds, how this technology has the opposite effect of what it's meant to do. And I don't know if that's just because as humans we are weak.
You know, in the Matrix,
remember he said we're weak.
And if you think about how we communicate messages to each other now, and this is something I've long had a problem with, is people will say, oh, but I got a thousand likes for something on Facebook. But that doesn't actually mean those people like you or care about what you're saying.
And the word like is odd because when someone says, like, you know, I lost my leg in a car accident, and they like it. It doesn't mean they like they lost my leg. I never understand.
Yeah.
Like is a strange word. Do you show support? There should be a show support button.
I think they've brought in a bunch of new
emoticons. I think people said, like, you know, my dog passed away.
Yeah.
I like that. I mean, like, it's bizarre. You know, it's a bizarre thing. I got 1,000 likes for my poor doggy passing away.
Exactly.
You know? It's like it seems unsympathetic.
And don't you think also that this loneliness that you talk about, because that was there before, but now...
Yeah. And Barley, won't you hold me? I'm so lonely.
But now if you're lonely...
No, but it's not a joke. We all know this.
Now if you're lonely, it's amplified because you have to look at all these other people on social media who are not lonely. So suddenly you feel way worse.
Well, that's another thing. And I think someone touched on it earlier in the Zoom segment, is that we have this internet elite that seems to flaunt their well-being.
How great their life is.
The nouveau riche.
Cash
you don't
all
find,
over.
You know, an old expression is money talks, but wealth whispers.
Yes.
The really rich, they're not on social media. You don't see Bill Gates talking about his car collection, you know, or whatever collection he's got. But the nouveau riche, especially in the new economies, the Russians, the Indians, I'm not stereotyping, the Chinese.
Yeah, they want to show it off.
They are showing it off.
Yeah.
I remember we were involved in a venture, an exploration with Naspers many years ago, in online selling, and they had Kalahari in Nigeria, and they closed it. And in the post-mortem, which I was involved in, but I was privileged to sit and listen, they said one of the reasons it didn't work is that there's a nouveau riche culture, and if someone buys a fancy watch, they want to put the cash on the table and say, that's me. They don't want to buy it anonymously on Amazon.com. People like to flash their cash there. This is what they told us. Whether it's...
I think that's true.
Well, I believe it's true, because this is what their learnings were, is that they didn't want this like anonymous purchase. They wanted to say, I'm buying a laptop, here's my cash. And... the nouveau riche, especially in the developing world, not to say it's a developing world problem, are flaunting this. Is flaunting the right word?
Flaunting.
Maybe
exactly
they don't know
the
they're
word.
Flaunting. Maybe they're just, I don't know, maybe they're just...
They're proud of their achievements or whatever. I mean...
Not achievements. They're proud of their spending.
Their spending.
Yeah. I mean, what achievements?
No,
a lot
sure.
of them, a lot of them made money by killing people.
But this
people.
Brings me to you.
You know, gangsters. Like, and,
you are one of the people who... I mean, you started this incredible business all these years ago. And you've done a couple of things that have made you a lot of money, and you've done some things that have made you no money. But
you may have lost me money. Let's just be honest.
Lost you money.
Lost.
But along the
lost,
way,
gone,
I mean, you've been
finished.
The same guy. And
finito.
This is, everybody tells
okay,
me.
I've known you a long time. You're the same.
Yeah, well, I hope so. But I think when people suddenly come into a lot of money, whether it's because of their own achievements or because of nefarious things, because there are a lot of people who can make money in dodgy ways too.
Absolutely.
Right? They change.
Yeah. Well, I don't know the psychology behind it, but I do know that people who seem to come into money quickly seem to spend a lot of time explaining how rich they are. Maybe because they feel a guilt that they didn't really work. Maybe they stole it. Maybe they were corrupt. Maybe they were just lucky and won the lottery.
Yeah.
So they have to almost justify it with this strange, I don't know, profiling. I have no idea the psychology behind it. But what we're all hinting at here is that as long as this continues, because that was the theme, there is going to be simple people, good, God-fearing, hard-working people sitting at home going, life's unfair. Why me? I'm disconnected. I've got nothing. I'm lonely. I don't have that life. There's, again, we spoke about George Carlin doing rounds. There are, like, it's funny. We actually read about this loneliness on the very medium that is causing it. And there's, like, banners that say, like, if only my life was as good as my Facebook pictures.
Well, here's the thing. I think Instagram has created way more distance between the haves and have-nots.
Absolutely.
Than almost any other single thing in the world.
Because it's pictures.
You actually get to see Dan Bilzerian on his jet with all these women with their tits out and like piles of money.
I'm slightly not that with it. Who's this guy?
Dan Bilzerian is a poker player.
Oh, a poker player. Yeah. Oh, geez. Now, there's a role model profession. Huh?
Okay, yeah.
I mean,
okay,
wow. If everyone listening to your show gave up their vocations, careers, university degrees, hard work, entrepreneurship,
career climbing, and
became poker players. Now, the world would be in better shape. Eh? If every one of you raising kids out there turns them into poker players.
Don't get cynical on me, Rob.
I'm just saying.
Well, no, but the thing is, there are a lot of people who look up to Dan Bilzerian and think, oh, well, if he did it, so can I.
That's what I'm saying. But is that a good thing? If everyone gave up farming, and everyone gave up teaching, and everyone gave up informing, writing, journalism, cooking, and we all became poker players, wow, the world would be fascinating. You know, we'd all be bluffing.
Ben.
Biley's done already. I don't know. I'm telling you. We're all bluffing.
This is music
bluffing.
To your ears.
No,
right?
Ronnie, don't stop. You carry on.
I
agree with every single thing you're saying. You carry on.
No, but this is old passions for me. I'd actually forgotten these passions because I meet a lot of... Can we get a little bit...
Whatever you like.
So I meet a lot of fund managers and my all favorite, like hedge fund guys.
Oh, yeah. They're the
who are very
scum
condescending.
Of the earth.
Very condescending.
Scum of the earth.
And talk to me like, wow, you're not clever enough to do what I'm doing. And I think to myself, hang on a second. If what you're doing is the ultimate job, then I should aspire to do that, right? Because you're very smart and you know everything and you make out like your work is incredible. So I should do what you're doing. And he goes, absolutely. And I go, but then we should all be doing what you're doing by simple inducing, you know, by simple logic. You've got the ultimate job. You're so smart. You're amazing. You only work like 2 hours a day, you know, and you're just a genius, rich guy. We should all be hedge fund managers. Absolutely. So now if we're all hedge fund managers, who's making the money that you're managing? Who's cooking the food? Who's lawyering? Who's teaching? Who's DJing? Who's writing? Who's building? Who's selling? Who's not? If everyone is managing money, who's making the money that these guys manage?
What did he say?
No, I'm just saying I never get that far. Normally they ask me to leave or the phone gets put down because at some point there's no answer.
Yeah.
You know, if everyone that's managing people's money is so incredibly smart and we should all aspire to be like that, then who's doing the work? Who's building these radio shows? Who's building this furniture? Who's making these phones? Who's making these jeans? Who's cooking our food? Who's lawyering? Who's teaching? If everyone's managing money,
totally understand.
Then we've got a world of parasites. You know? And if I referred to them as parasites, I really meant it. It wasn't a slip. You know? And I'm sure the hedge fund managers out there, I'm sure there's some decent, you know, family-orientated people, but I've never met any of them. You know? I mean, I was invited to a dinner.
I was going to ask you
with the Wolf of Wall Street.
Okay, yeah, tell me.
I haven't seen the film.
Yeah.
I haven't read the book, and I said, I'm not interested in going to the dinner. And the guy said, why? I said, I'm not interested in going to dinner with a scumbag. I mean, the guy's making money off touring the world. Is he giving the money back to all the people that
he ripped off? Yeah.
Not ripped off, destroyed. Now, I'm not so righteous. I've got flaws and vices like everyone else. I'm not the most perfect human being. I'm sure all of us in this room have got our stories, but I don't look in the mirror and go, you know what? I misled people. I was out of control. I was, you know, crook. According to the law, I mean, it's like I take a gun and I steal your money.
Yeah.
What these guys are doing, they don't see as crooked. It's parasitic. It's not spiritual. It's not crooked by the law as we know it. They're not stealing, like robbing a bank. If a guy came into a F&B with a gun and robbed it, you'd say he's a crook. But these guys are perverting what we consider capitalism. It's perverted.
Right.
And perversion has never been a pretty thing in any sense, whether it's sex perversion or financial perversion. Perversion is perversion. It's a funny sounding word. It's perverted. But it's not even more perverted that a guy can go on a roadshow and be a role model. An icon. Yeah. An icon for what?
An
icon for scumbagness.
And Ronnie, let's be honest too.
Maybe he's a friend of your guys. I don't know him. You know?
But
I don't want to meet him. I don't want to see his film. I don't want to read his books. You know?
Why should you help him make more money?
No, I just don't want to be a part of it. I feel dirty.
Yeah.
You know, there's enough dirt out there already without that.
Do you find that a lot of offending anyone? Not at least. Why should you care?
Because people say, Ronnie, but it's a great movie. It's DiCaprio. I don't care who it is. I don't know DiCaprio. The point is that somebody has chosen to celebrate this. Why do you want to celebrate bullshit? I mean, there's real things to celebrate. Wow. This kid.
See, I say these things all the time, and I get shot down.
I get shot down too. I don't get invited to many dinners because of it. You know? Because they're only you like a negative guy. I said, what do you mean negative guy? You know, I'm the most positive guy around. I make magic tricks and make jokes, and we're building a site called Cool.
You raise money for charity, for God's sake.
I mean, I'm not a negative guy, but guys, you can't.
You make movies that make zero money.
At some point, you have to. Exactly. People
what
say,
a mensch.
No, what an optimist, you know? At some point, you just have to say, guys, I also have my own voice. And if I choose not to celebrate like evil, then that's my choice. I don't want to celebrate. I want to support evil. There's enough evil that is like child molesting and people that hurt animals. I mean, that's real evil. Yeah. Why must I now take an evil that people don't understand? Because we don't understand it, we therefore can pigeonhole it and say, well, he's the Wolf of Wall Street. Give it a nice title, the Wolf of Wall Street. Like, it's just
dress it up nicely.
It's like, dress it up, exactly. It's this guy.
It's still a shithead.
And he's just one guy. Yeah. You know, it's just one guy. I mean, my mate Ivan Epstein made a comment and said to me, is there any difference to the people at Goldman Sachs? And I'm not an authority. I said, probably not. He says, only difference, they didn't throw midgets around. But I mean, they didn't toss midgets, you know.
Yeah, nobody went to jail in that subprime crisis in 2008,
well,
did they?
I think that, if we're going to get back into politics, that is the single biggest, is it the word downfall, negative? It's like, I read it online. It's the biggest single negative comment about the Obama administration.
Yeah.
And maybe it just wasn't possible to do that because you're almost handcuffing the whole system. But Obama did not punish anyone.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think he's been a bad president. I'm not American.
No, sure.
I think he's done a lot of good. But I think any president, you can't just put the blame on him. He inherited the shit. Any president would have had a tough time punishing all those white-collar criminals. And I think that is one of the negative legacies of that last 8 years, is that nobody went to prison.
Well, listen, I think we only just got a little bit warmed up towards
Absolutely,
the end.
Yeah.
I like this.
And there's many themes here.
This very passionate Ronnie Uptaker is the guy who changes the world. This
well,
is you.
I don't know about that.
No, you are. That's what I love about you.
I changed
you.
My underwear and socks this
dude,
morning. But that was
stop it. This is your energy that makes things happen.
But can we give one more?
Give a plug.
No, one more plug. So if anybody out there is looking for some insight and some guidance, we've got this website, and thank you very much, everyone, for supporting it, called coolfinance.com. Just mm-hmm. like it sounds, coolfinance, like confidence. It's like a cool confidence. And we offer insight and techniques and tips and exercises and just things that help people engage.
Oh, it'll get you laid even.
You know, there's many aspects to engaging. There's the four pillars. There's
it'll
social.
Get you laid.
There's social. There's parenting. Every right. parent needs to engage with their kids.
Sure. And they've lost that too. Yeah.
Well, we're trying to... Yeah, absolutely. We're trying to...
Put the kid in front of the PS4.
Exactly. We're trying to just add something positive to help change that status quo. But I think you're right. Yeah. So there's the parenting, there's the social, there's the lovers, and there's the workplace. We're focusing on the workplace, but I have to agree, because you're right, it applies to everything.
Hey, you learn these techniques, it can only make you more interesting.
And get you laid, as you said.
That's right. Yeah. I mean, that,
we're not advocating
that.
That
is a unique selling point that very few people want to focus on, but it's what everyone wants.
To get
wants.
You laid. You know?
Coolfinance.com.
Or to get you laid off. You know, if you don't engage people, you're going to lose your job. You can't just sit there in the corner and be lonely. You have to engage. You're not going to fit in.
Listen, man, I love talking to you.
Wow.
Okay. That's nice to have you here.
Can you guys leave us alone for a few minutes?
All right, let's wrap it up with the news. We've got Andrew and Rory coming up next. The show's finished.
Oh, okay.
Ronnie. We're out of here.
I better get back to my work.
We've got the unnews, and we will see you tomorrow morning between 6 and 9. Thank you to Ronnie Uptier. CliffCentral.com.